You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hi, I'm Shelley MacArthur Everett, and you're listening to Marketing News Canada. Today, I'm excited to welcome our next guest, Mandy Gilbert. A best-selling author, entrepreneur, CEO, and investor, Mandy has been recognized as a United Nations Global Accelerator and ranked as one of Canada's top female entrepreneurs on Canadian Business's Profit 500 list and Chatelaine's W100 list. In 2002, Gilbert started Creative Niche, a specialized recruitment firm focused on marketing, advertising, tech, and digital, and was one of the first female-founded recruitment firms to compete in a predominantly male industry. Today, it brings more than 10 figures in annual sales and has successfully placed over 14,000 professionals in award-winning creative agencies, high-profile tech companies, and Fortune 500 across North America. Her book, Just Go With It, How to Navigate the Ups and Downs of Entrepreneurship, became an Amazon bestseller in its debut week and was recommended by Forbes, Entrepreneur, and many other business publications. Gilbert also writes weekly columns for Inc. magazine and is a contributor to Rolling Stone. Hi, Mandy. So great to have you join me today.
Thanks. Hi, Shelley. Yeah. I'm really happy to be here with you.
Yeah, we've had some great chats offline already, so much so that I lost a bit of track of time, but figured we should get started here. I know we're all really excited to hear about your journey as an entrepreneur, and yeah, maybe you can tell us how you got started.
Yeah, you know, if you can believe it, I was just messaging with my team of something that we need to think about is our upcoming 20th anniversary.
Wow.
So you can imagine that in almost 20 years, it's been a real journey. I actually started my business after a really crazy whirlwind of an opportunity that I was working on achieving. Actually, I was working for a large public recruitment company. And my goal was to one day get chosen to have this position. It came with a really large increase, but more importantly for me, it gave me an opportunity at C-suite of a public company. I had a seat at the table and I was going to be traveling around as a director, making recommendations, training, and helping growing teams across the United States. So I was so happy to get this opportunity and this promotion internally. And I finally got my offer letter and I was sitting at the office and they had it in front of me. The company announcement was going out the next day. I was 27 years old. I had just gotten married and I couldn't sign the offer letter. Just something was holding me back from signing it. And so I actually quickly signed it, and then I ran over to the shredding machine. I shredded it. And I just thought, I am not, at the end of the day, I didn't feel philosophically aligned with the organization or my role. And I had been struggling with that kind of balance because it was a great opportunity, but there was something that just wasn't resonating with my heart, my belief system. And so I went and I shredded it, and I thought, wow, everyone was counting on me signing this offer. I'd been in discussion for weeks. And the next day I went in and I resigned. I went and got a personal line of credit. And a week and a half later, I moved into my little co-working space. I had 150 square foot office with no windows. And I had my big purple iMac that I lugged into the office with me. And that's how I got started.
Wow. And what were you getting started on?
Well, I loved what I did. And so I've been in recruitment. And like many people that get into recruitment, you do not go to university to focus in that. You kind of just land there. And I really love the purpose of the recruitment function. You know, you're making meaningful matches. Oftentimes, candidates can be misrepresented or they're not sure what direction they should choose. So playing a role in having those candid and very vulnerable conversations and helping candidates, you know, find the right opportunity, but also building entrepreneurial companies, building teams and cultures. It's a very rewarding role. So I loved what I was doing. I just didn't particularly feel aligned with the organization and the way that it operated. And there was nothing, you know, horrible about it. It just, I felt there was an opportunity to do things differently. So what I decided to do was continue to do what I loved. And so I opened up a recruitment agency of my own I secured a big startup loan of $8,000, which was really enough to keep me afloat for 6 weeks with no plan B. I didn't have anyone in my network that had money, and there was no real plan B. So it was go time. Yeah.
So interesting. My start as an entrepreneur is actually fairly similar to that, but it was the decision for me to not return after my first maternity leave. And I had fully planned on going back, and just something struck where I was thinking, I just couldn't see how that would work for me anymore, and took a leap of faith, had a fallback plan in case I had completely failed. And luckily, 9 years later, here I am. So
that's
awesome. I think when you don't have an option of failure, that really keeps you going for sure.
Yes, it's a great motivator.
It's a great motivator for sure. Yeah. So 20 years later, tell me about Creative Niche.
Creative Niche is a purely specialized recruitment firm that's focused in advertising, marketing, digital. We work a lot in tech. So over the years, we've gone through different changes. You know, as an entrepreneur, you're always iterating, coming up with different ideas and ways to innovate within your space. So I'm sure, as you can imagine, in that 20 years, you know, I had two kids, amazing kids. They're now 16 and 13. It happened very, very quickly. They grow up fast. So I had a family, and in the background, you know, went through a very significant recession that hit us very quickly. I didn't have the real, you know, business experience to navigate that very well. I felt very alone. It was an incredibly scary time. And as I mentioned before we got started, is that my business outgrew my own capabilities. I actually don't have a university degree. I had never really been mentored in business before becoming an entrepreneur. So there's been a lot of difficult growth stages for me. You know, one being, you know, the most important is really becoming a better leader and becoming more self-aware of how you make people feel and how you motivate them, and how you ensure that they have an understanding of their impact and, you know, what you're looking to accomplish and your vision and your goals, and they have an opportunity to be heard. And so developing as a leader has been hugely important to me and our ability to scale over time. And so today, where we are the largest in our space. We work with a lot of leading organizations in different sectors, not just across Canada, but we also do work in the US as well. And we are in the process of scaling further. So we ended up launching a secondary company over COVID. That was actually just a special project that we tried, and we pitched it to a couple of companies, and it's just taking off. So we're very excited about that. And we're really excited about going into our 20th year. I've got a fabulous team, and we're incredibly, you know, grateful and fortunate to work with awesome talent and clients.
Would you say that there was a pivotal moment as an entrepreneur, one where you felt like there was a bit of a crossroads, where you felt like, you said before that your business was kind of outgrowing you? Was there a moment where you just kind of, it clicked?
There were moments that, you know, I guess parts of my challenges clicked, because, you know, for me, I was having a difficult time having tough conversations. So for me to learn how to have the courage to go forward and embrace tough, you know, tough conversations and be decisive and being confident in making decisions in the business, you know, those are two that probably, you know, stand out. But I think it was probably around, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, when I walked into work and I thought, it's actually been a long time since I have felt this engaged and happy, because I had been doing a lot of work and I had some things to prove to my team, because, you know, through my journey and as being an entrepreneur, we can sometimes have a challenge with staying focused and not being distracted and following through with some of our ideas and having that kind of consistency. And I had been doing a lot of work on my leadership style, but also just my discipline and staying on track and being consistent and having that focus. So there was a day when I felt like everything had come together, like the culture felt great. I had promoted some individuals and we now had a leadership team. I was being a lot more vulnerable of things that were keeping me up at night. And I think as an entrepreneur, we always want to protect our team from that. So we just carry all of that burden and worry. And some of that just needs to stay with us because we also don't want to freak people out. But for, you know, the less scary things, and I eventually even shared some of the scary things. And what I learned was sharing those things weren't very scary to other people. We were able to really get behind them and ideate and come up with some solutions. And a byproduct of that is that you grow your team. You grow your team, but you grow amazing relationships that are significant. And when you accomplish things as a team and as a leadership team, they're hugely rewarding. And there's that feeling and level of connectedness you don't have otherwise.
Yeah, I think vulnerability is something that some can say that it's a sign of weakness to be vulnerable. But at the same time, you're really just also showing your team that you trust them with that level of vulnerability and that you're human as well. And so once you're able to forge a bit more of a connection that way, I think it just makes everyone stronger together in the end.
I agree. Vulnerability is a sign of, for me, it's a sign of courage and not a weakness. And there's a difference between, you know, oversharing your own issues. That's not vulnerability, but I think that it's in the lens of transparency of what's going on and being honest and real about what's going on. So I do think there's a difference, and it's understanding what that difference is as well.
Yeah, absolutely. How has recruitment changed over the years? And certainly 20 years, you've seen quite the journey. Mm-hmm. I imagine especially it's changed significantly even in the past couple of years, but what does that look like for you?
Yeah. Well, obviously when we're working in a lot of the creative tech digital side of things, so we're usually tasked with, you know, working on emerging roles. So one thing that's always changing is the tech platforms, the new operations in terms of like how organizations are structuring and building teams with new capabilities. So, you know, growth marketing, for instance, hasn't really existed that long. So helping navigate and learn all of that and stay on top of it, it's an awesome opportunity for our team. We're always learning from our clients and from, of course, our candidates and our interviewing process. So for us, you know, the change has been we were working on a lot of more executional and conceptual roles back in the day. And now we're working on a lot more technical roles and new and emerging roles that are super cool. So that's something that's just always kind of changing. Now we're seeing, and you know, specifically, you know, since the pandemic, recruitment has been, you know, significant. A lot of organizations claim to have gone through digital transformation, but when the pandemic hit, I think a lot of organizations were like, okay, well, we've been talking about it and we've got our strategic plan for that. And we've started executing on that a bit, but we're not through digital transformation. So there's been a tremendous amount of hiring on, you know, product side, you know, UX, UI, project management. And I mentioned that we work with a lot of leaders. And so on the tech side, we're working with a lot of different organizations that have received substantial funding. So putting in CMOs to continue with their growth, meet some of their KPIs and metrics. So I would say that, you know, for us, the levels have gone up. The pressure has gone up for sure because it is a real talent marketplace. And I know anybody listening to this is shaking their heads. So one thing in particular that we've seen in the last 18 months that I haven't seen like together in all of my 22 years of recruitment is that how many aggressive counteroffers have been made and accepted. So usually by the time a candidate is like, oh, I'm not really feeling it. I'm being overlooked for opportunity. I'm not being acknowledged. I'm working too hard. I'm going to apply for a role. I'm going to go through that. And if I get that role, I'm leaving this company because they've not really been treating me that great. Well, so counteroffers were never really a challenge. But during the pandemic, we've lost more opportunities from counteroffers than we have multiple offers. So organizations have really doubled down on their retention strategy. And so we have seen increases up to 25% to retain somebody who's resigned. And that's pretty significant. And sometimes one or two layers up in title bump. And so employers have, you know, have been overworked. I think that, you know, everybody, you know, with an organization, whether you're leading an organization or a team, or you're on that team, everyone's been working a significant amount of hours and, you know, and from home for the most part. When I speak from Toronto, like, or in Ontario, we've had the longest lockdown of a city and a region of our size in the world. So working from home, there's no differentiation. So everyone's just been working around the clock for so many months. And I think that leaders and organizations have recognized that knowledge transfer is very difficult to do, especially when you're busy, and to do it virtually is tough. So you're missing shadowing, you're missing culture integration, you're missing all of these things are just way more complicated. In addition to that, you have your own workload. And so that's created this craziness in the market around retention strategies and counter offers, because nobody wants to lose people. It's a real inconvenience and it can put business at risk.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what are some strategies that you're seeing businesses employing in regards to retention? Because it's not all about salary, and mostly it's actually quite the opposite.
Yeah. So, I mean, retention is a big one. And I was actually doing a talk yesterday about, we ended up focusing quite a bit on retention. It was for leaders who are having a difficult time attracting and retaining their employees. You know, there's a number of things. I mean, first of all, I believe that over communication is a really good thing right now. Millennials make up the majority of our workforce. We know they want to be communicated to. They want to know where they stand. They want to be acknowledged and they want flexibility. And so in retention, I think it's important to ideate on pillars, whether, you know, it could be compensation. Do we have anyone who has done comparisons to see if our compensation is competitive? Because sometimes it is money, depending on the level of position. If somebody can get a $5,000 increase, and that's more money for their family, even if they love your company, they might leave you for compensation, and that would be a real shame. So it's looking at, you know, are we paying competitively? Not from where we were 2 years ago, but to the market today. And if you don't know that, assigning somebody internally to do some competitive analysis and understand how you are faring, looking at your perks. So are your days off competitive? Do you have any fun incentives that you can offer? And if you are not a big organization or a very wealthy organization, not all perks and incentives have to cost a lot of money. So looking at your perks, looking at your communication, looking at, you know, going back to compensation, is there pay equity? Are we paying women the same amount for individuals that have contributed for a longer period of time in a more impactful way? They're an exemplary employee. They lead by example. Have you gone? Have you acknowledged them? Have you given them a proactive increase? So it's really getting in tune with that in terms of like figuring out the soft side of it and the compensation side of it. And it's looking at your data. So, you know, some leaders go, you know what? I can't pay anybody anymore. I just can't. I am maxed out. I can't keep up with this bidding process. Like, it's crazy. I can't keep up. Looking at your data. So how much does it cost your business if you don't fill a position? How much does it cost your business if you lose great people? Because you can really find some money and opportunity to be creative. And, you know, I heard from a leader who said, you know, she assigned a task force to look at something so they could be a little bit more efficient as a company. And that efficiency actually created a cost savings, a direct cost savings of $450,000. And she took that money to recognize her staff. Like, isn't that cool?
Yeah, amazing.
So thinking about ideas in which that, you know, can you renegotiate some of your vendors? Is there a way to create some cost savings for your business that you can in return then give some of that back to your employees as a retention strategy? So it is about knowing what's out there and what's competitive, and also thinking creatively about what can you do without hurting your bottom line too.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you go about finding individuals?
Well, I mean, they're out there. We all have access to them through platforms in creative niches, been at it for a while. So we have a fairly large network and referral program, but we do targeted direct recruitment. So that's how we go about finding our clients. We were never really looking for the candidates who are applying for positions. We go out and you know, for the roles and organizations that we work at, they want passive candidates. So they're out there. The problem is that everyone is in touch with them. So it's almost a full-time role for them to respond to everyone who's reaching out about it. Great opportunity. So it's figuring out how you can differentiate your opportunity from others and not misrepresent what you can actually offer. So it's a lot of hard work to get some of these in-demand candidates to engage with you and to be receptive to hearing about, you know, various opportunities.
Are there certain strategies that you employ? You know, I find sometimes when I'm interviewing individuals, they know exactly what you want to hear. And so oftentimes the first 3-month period is the real interview. And I've been surprised way more than I wanted to be with how it actually works out. But how do you go about trying to really filter out those types of candidates from the beginning so that, you know, those mismatches aren't made?
Yeah. You know, I understand that's tough. I've been tricked a few times myself. It happens to the best of us. I think it's a matter of having a great interviewing process. So like for Creative Niche, we have two interviews and then we have an amazing interviewing committee. It's a culture interview. It's actually longer than the first two. And they actually uncover a lot about, you know, decisions to make, you know, changes from one company to the next, roles, like they really get in there. So, and they actually have the final stamp of, they give us the final stamp of approval as our culture committee. They play a huge role in our recruitment process. So, I mean, one of my favorite sayings is, you know, hire slow and fire fast. So I think it's fair to say sometimes you hire individuals and they just don't work. That could be your fault too. Maybe you didn't onboard them correctly. Maybe you motored through the interviewing process because you just wanted them to be perfect because you need to hire and get this off your plate. So, you know, it's really making sure that you have that thorough process and you're really uncovering everything you need to. But sometimes people don't work out and that's okay. You know, I really firmly believe people wake up every day and want to provide value and do a good job and feel good when they leave for the day. So if somebody's not doing that, they're probably getting an inclination and know as well that maybe they're not hitting it home. So the fairest thing to do is let them go and let them go with class and dignity and do that in a very thoughtful way. And so I think, you know, you can always prevent hiring somebody who doesn't work out, but you can wrap it up quickly. And I think most people do recognize when flags are, you know, being raised internally, either you're seeing it yourself or others are sharing that with you. So it is a matter of taking action and making sure that people have had the amount of time and the amount of feedback and communication so they don't feel blindsided. You know, being let go is a very traumatic experience for most people. So you want to be as professional and thoughtful about that process and make that happen.
Are there certain traits in individuals that you're looking at when hiring, no matter what the position is?
I think that, you know, people go, oh, the top skill now is, you know, Google and here, you know what? I'd say that it's collaboration and effective communication. And I think that, you know, it's one of the most important skill sets. Now, even in the future, when they do projection of the top skills in 10 years, most of it's people skills, if you look at it, pretty interesting. So collaboration, teamwork, communication, but being able to collaborate means that you need to be a bit vulnerable of what you know, what you don't know. And you also need to have an open mind that, hey, your idea was great, but this person might have a different spin on it that might be a more effective solution or concept. So it's being able to take feedback and not get too stuck with your beliefs or your ideas and collaborating effectively. And I think that we have really recognized who's great at that and who's not great at that during the pandemic, because collaborating is even a little bit trickier when you're doing it virtually. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that collaboration makes magic happen in organizations. That's how you get better. That's how you learn. And that's how you gain awareness of where things are really at and where you're going. So that's what I would consider a top skill for today. Mm-hmm.
One thing that I noticed during the pandemic when everyone was working virtually is that in an office, when you're all together, you'll often see a lot of the extroverted employees that are the louder employees that are the first to speak up. But when we went to a virtual environment, I think it let a lot of the more introverted employees shine in that they were speaking up virtually rather than in an open forum. So I think that that was really neat to see.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Tell me about your new book, or it's just come out in the past year or so. What led you to become an author?
Well, I've been speaking for some time now. And, you know, it's interesting. I think since, you know, the rise of social media, we often compare ourselves to the ideal. So when you're looking at, you know, Inc. or Entrepreneur or Forbes, it's, you know, this person just raised, you know, a crazy amount of money or did a really big exit, and look at them, you know, they're 25 and they're amazing. And that's great. And you know what? There's some incredible entrepreneurs and business leaders are doing super cool things. So when I've been doing my talk, I'm actually very open about the realities for me and the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur. So my book is not about, look at me, what I've accomplished. My book has been like all of the tough lessons that I've had to learn along the way. And with the hope that similarly to when I speak, I get a lot of people that just want to come and, you know, give me a hug or just say, thanks for being real. Because I think being an entrepreneur, you put everything on the line, and, you know, people think you put everything on the line and that is money. And you do have money on the line. You do. And you do have a lot of financial pressure, but you're also putting everything else on the line. You're putting your confidence on the line. You're putting your ego on the line. You're putting your heart on the line. There's a lot more to it. And, you know, forget imposter syndrome. You know, I've created a new syndrome. It's called loser syndrome. And as an entrepreneur, I have often felt like a big loser, failure, in fact, because we can get stuck in comparing ourselves to the ideal. But when you see these great entrepreneurs and leaders that have done these awesome things, know that they too have a story. It's never a straight line to success. It's never a straight line. And also, not every business is going to be a unicorn. And there's nothing wrong with a $2 million business or a $10 million business. There's nothing wrong with that. Actually, when you look at the numbers, those businesses make up the majority of our economy. And every business can be successful. And you can be enough. And you can always, if you fall out of love in your business, which happens when you go through really tough times, you can always reconnect with it. And, you know, and work on the areas that you need to work on to develop to be a better entrepreneur. When you're a better entrepreneur, it means that you are happier and you go home with a different energy and you come to the office with a different energy that your team will observe and notice. So that was the motivation, is that I don't have the bandwidth always to do as many talks as I would like, because I am, you know, I'm in it. I'm working. I'm a practitioner, but I'm also a writer. So I have a weekly column with Inc. And I'm also a tech investor. So, and I sit on a couple of boards. And so I have a limited amount of time to do speaking. And so I wanted my book to reach those entrepreneurs in hopes that there's something there that really resonates them or triggers an idea of something that they can try differently, or at least that if it gives them peace of mind that success does not happen overnight and it's a bit of a bumpy path, but it should be worth it. It should be worth it, because we do put everything on the line and we walk away from security, you know, for this adventure. So it should be rewarding. It should be fun. You should be making money. You should be able to take time off and not really compromise for not having those things in your life. Mm-hmm.
Those are all such amazing points and really important for any entrepreneur, no matter where they are in their journey. And it can be quite lonely. And those ups and downs can happen so quickly. You can, from day to day sometimes, you know, or even the same day, such a great morning, earn some new contracts in the afternoon, one phone call can set it off. So right. It's great to have that, a network of other people as well that you can relate to. And we talked a little bit about this offline that, you know, for the first part of both of our entrepreneur journey, we were a bit on an island. And yeah, I think it's good sometimes to connect with other people that are going through the same thing, for sure.
Yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Mandy, are you ready for a bit of rapid fire questions?
I am. Fire away.
Okay. All right. So first thing that comes to your mind, no wrong answers.
Okay.
And one word, if possible.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. What was your first job?
My first job was a telemarketer.
Are you a night owl or an early bird?
Night owl.
Are you a cat or dog person?
Definitely dog.
What was the first thing you marketed?
Radio stations.
Dark chocolate or milk?
Dark.
What is your favorite word right now?
Clarity.
What was the last charity you supported financially with your time or with your time? I'll start over, sorry. What was the last charity you supported either financially or with your time?
The Remix Project.
A movie you love?
Cinema Paradiso.
A favorite song or album on repeat right now?
Way Too Sexy, Drake. Love it.
If you weren't doing this job, what would you be doing?
Impact work.
Do you have a favorite children's book?
Good Night Moon.
Nice, mine too. What was the best thing you've purchased for under $10?
Oh, that's a stumper. A croissant this morning. It's delicious.
Nice. What would your superpower be?
Connecting people.
What was the last thing you Googled?
Last thing I Googled was information about my puppy.
A business or a marketing book that you'd recommend?
Scaling Up, Vern Harnish.
Good one. A life hack that you'd be willing to share?
Outsource as much as you can so you can enjoy your life.
Yes. Any skills that you would recommend for a new economy, like job skills or perhaps something emerging?
Digital marketing and data.
Thank you, Mandy. That was great.
That was fun.
Yeah. Anything that you'd like to share with our listeners? What's on the horizon for you?
The horizon for me, that's a great question. I am in the process of scaling a new business, and I'm really loving and enjoying that process. That feels like kind of that same feeling I had 20 years ago. And I'm really enjoying that process quite a bit. I'm also doing quite a bit of speaking, which I really enjoy. And I'm really looking forward to doing that in person, because virtually it's very, it's very difficult. You just don't get that energy from an audience and the ability to connect with anyone. So yeah. I'm enjoying that. So lots of good stuff in the horizon. I'm feeling, you know, very engaged and excited.
Nice.
Where
can people find you?
People can find the book on Amazon, and they can find me at mandy@creativeniche.com. If they wanted to fire over an email, no problem.
Thank you, Mandy. This has been so great.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks, Shelley.
That's so great. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.